You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? It's, I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
All right, y'all, bear with me. I may have gotten that fixed. Thank you for getting on with me, brother. And for anybody out there listening, sorry, we're having some technical difficulties getting this thing started, so bear with me. Can you still hear me, William? Pretty good?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you. Yep.
Okay, good, good, good. I got Terry just jumped on. So for anybody there listening, sorry for the rough start. I'll get the intro started here. I was just having, so as you probably heard, a little double sound, so I knew it wasn't going to work if it did that the whole show. All right, let's start our intro and get this thing started. So do apologize for the rough start. We will be right back after this intro and get this show started properly. But, again, thank y'all for being with us. It happens from time to time. We'll be right back.
I think what you're trying to ask is why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. Is I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host William Agnew, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we assure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning to all the intellectual outcasts. We did have a little rough start this morning, but we got to pop this thing off. Got a couple of returning guests. I just mentioned my brother, William Agnew. Also have Terry Simmons on the line. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into this thing, if you will, William. Let people know a little bit of your background before we let the cat out the bag on this morning's discussion question. But again, thank you for being with us, King.
No problem. Thank you, Montoya. Thank you for having me. Good morning, everybody. I'm on the West Coast, so it's a little early here, so y'all got to bear with me. I'm trying to – I got some technical difficulties in waking up. So
I love it.
But with that said, I'm glad to be here. Yeah, I'm a serial. I like thinking of myself, or some people call me a serial entrepreneur since 2008. My background is did the traditional thing, went to school, got my, undergrad in engineering, got my major in, or my graduate in business, global management, MBA. Worked for the corporation. I worked for Intel Corporation for about 8 years. Very, very wonderful company. I can't say anything bad about them. They're nominated, best place to work many years. Really understood how to take care of their employees and provide that value. I got homies that have been working for them for 25 years still to this day. But for me, this topic that we're going to talk about just pulled me away from that. You know what I mean? I just kept pulling at my, my entrepreneurial strings. And so I had to leave. It's not a question of if I wanted to leave, I had to leave, because I'm one of those guys that have to go out there and find out for myself. You can tell me all you want, but I'm one of those guys that I got experiences. I've been like that since a kid. And, God bless my mom. but she knows that, regardless of what you tell me, I got experiences for myself, because I realize that experience is the best teacher. And I'm one of those people that just had to go out and do it. So I've been doing that for about the past 8, 9 years, 10 years, and it's been a wonderful experience. It hasn't been all sweet, but it's been a great experience, and it has been sweet at the same time. So it's bittersweet. So with that being said, I've done a few companies. We'll talk about those. I'm sure we'll get into it. But, yes, I've been, you know, doing that for quite some time now. So, yeah.
I love it. And without further ado, glad to have this brother returning black to the show, as I like to say. What's up, Terry? Thank you, King, for being with us, if you will. Say hello to the intellectual outcast. Say what's up to William on the show and give people your background, which is pretty extensive, and they'll understand exactly why I brought you on for this particular show. But thank you for being with us, King.
What's going on, brother? I appreciate you having me, as usual. William, glad to tag team this morning, and hopefully we'll, you know, inspire some people, compel some people, and educate some folks through our conversation this morning. Look, Montoya, I thought you was gonna give me one of them Nori Drink Champs intros, man. You normally lace me with the intro. You making me work this morning.
Well, you know, the technical difficulties threw me off my game a little bit, so charge it to the technical difficulties. You know what I'm saying? So charge it to the technical difficulties, because I definitely was scrambling trying to get this thing. I was like, man, if this sounds like this is the rest of the show, we ain't gonna have no show. So I'm trying to get back into my lane. So I'm gonna let you pump yourself up. But I feel you, brother. It's better when other people talk about you than when you have to talk about yourself. So definitely, you know, I definitely could bring you on. Typically, you know, like Steve Harvey said, does I bring you out or does I bring you out? You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I ain't on my game this morning, but go ahead, King. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, so Terry Simmons, the founder and managing director of Orange Strategy. What we do as an organization, our clients are spread out across Louisiana, Texas, and Georgia for the most part. Recently, we've done some work in Pennsylvania. We've done some work in Tennessee. So we're continuing to expand as an organization. What we do primarily, and it's basically two sides of the house, so to speak. On the small to mid-market size company side of the house, we do a ton of brand development. We help small businesses to build infrastructure. We help them with organizational design, so putting business models in place, as well as helping them to acquire the talent that they need in order to grow. On the enterprise side of the house, we work with Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies to help them with their workforce development challenges. And a lot of times that's workforce marketing related. So some of the biggest manufacturing companies in the world, oil and gas companies, healthcare companies are on our client roster. And I mean, you know, if you don't have to, you know, even be a business guru to see that most industries are struggling to find the talent that they need. And that can be for a number of different reasons. We don't have to get into that because I think the audience that we have on this show is more primarily a independent business, audience. But we help them to put long-term strategies and employer brands in place that can help them attract the talent they need in the future. So that's the two sides of the house for us. We've worked with hundreds of independent businesses, been in business since 2004, so next year will be 20 years for us. Have grown to 16 employees now, a number of contractors and subcontractors that work with us, and, you know, seven figures in revenue. So I know that's kind of the magic number for a lot of – Montoya, you know, I don't really like talking like that because that's not really my style, But for context, I want people to know, you know, where we are in that progression. And so, you know, maybe you can add some credibility to what we have to say.
No, absolutely. Credibility is kind of without question. I can say, you know, help, you know, one of our former members double their income working with you directly. And so definitely love to vouch for that credibility and knowing, you know, we know your history very much. You've been pretty much a lifelong entrepreneur, you know, even, you know, hustling even in college and turning into transforming from a hustler to a true business person. So and that's a transition in itself. Nothing wrong with starting that way, but hopefully as we get into this morning's discussion, we can kind of shore that up for a lot of people. But this morning's discussion question, we're going to go to a break. Again, got a little late start with the intro. But this morning's discussion question, if you're a first-time listener, we always do our show in the form of a question. The idea, I go by Black Socrates, so we take the Socratic method to try to get to some answers on some of these questions. So this morning's discussion question is, boss up, can everyone become entrepreneurs? Boss up, can everyone become entrepreneurs? And we're taking that, you know, in this era where everybody's in a sense pushing to have ownership, pushing to be a boss or claiming to be a boss, if you will.
And so with that said, we're going to go to this quick break and get directly into this morning's discussion question, and we will open up the phone line so y'all can ask our experts any questions you may have or call in to give us your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Shout out to Kazimde over at Black Dot Culture Center and Bookstore. Thanks for carrying The Education of the Negro, Necessary Conversations on Race, Sex, and Culture. That's my new book. If you enjoy conversations like we have here every Saturday on the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, be sure to pick up my book so you and your family can engage in authentic dialogue. They can learn to navigate the African-American experience. Also, while you're at Black Dot, make sure you grab a cup of Ethiopian coffee and my favorite, the smoked salmon croissant. Visit Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore at 6984 Main Street, Lithonia, Georgia, 30058. Tell them Mental Dialogue sent you.
You know, Atlanta is really a hub where a lot of this is taking place. So the good thing about it is that our community is starting to think about entrepreneurship and investing probably more than we have in the past 70, 80 years. The negative thing about it is that a lot of those influences perpetuate the issues that William was describing. And so it becomes about, in essence, having this alter ego or this moniker that we go by. We tell people to quit their jobs, you know, to monetize whatever their skill set is, charge what they're worth. And I even see some of, and again, this is it's pertinent as far as I'm concerned. I even see a lot of these cats that'll say, you know, why would you work, you know, 40 hours for someone else when you can work 80 hours for yourself in essence and have the freedom that comes with that. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I already know you ain't got no employees because you wouldn't be talking like that if you needed to attract talent. You wouldn't go online and say having a job makes you, in essence, subservient or that you're a second-class citizen if you have to actually attract talent. Because it's kind of common sense. So I'm like, okay, yeah, you're a solopreneur, you know, with a virtual assistant in Beijing, and you know, you're just pushing a bunch of digital products. And I'm not trying to say there's anything wrong with that, but that's not the model. These people, they're gifted, that they're gifted communicators, that they may be, you know, aesthetically gifted, they may be funny online, they may be great storytellers, and they're able to attach a product to it that they can sell. Most small business owners have to build businesses in a different type of way. And so I just think that's the first thing, is that we got to shift our mentality. Second.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, boss up, can everyone become entrepreneurs? Special guests, longtime entrepreneurs, William Agnew, as well as Terry Simmons, as I play Terry's words back to him. We have these private access Zooms that we do for the Mental Dialogue Black Level members, for those who know about our community club. And so I had Terry, in a sense, lead on one of our private access. And so I'm kind of using your words to set up this morning's discussion, because I think it's actually perfect considering the times that we're in with social media and all of the push that you will hear on social media about becoming an entrepreneur. I think it's a perfect segue to start this morning's discussion. So, Terry, I'll let you jump in on your own words and start us off this morning. But go ahead, Ken.
Montoya, I don't know where you be pulling these clips from, brother. I don't even remember saying that. Look, I can't never run for public office fooling with you, man. It'll be 20 years from now, I tell you, going to archives and mess up the whole campaign, man. But no, man. So that clip was definitely a good foundation to build this discussion around. And let me say this to anyone that's listening now or that are listening to the recording of this podcast, is that the context in which I'm saying this, the tone, the vein in which I'm saying what I have to say, is not to discourage anyone. It's not to disparage anyone. It's not to minimize anyone's accomplishments. It is not to attack anyone's approach to business. What I want to do, the people that I want to speak directly to, are not the people that are focused on generating personal income primarily. There's nothing wrong with that. If someone wants to be a solopreneur, they want to, you know, go a boutique organization and have the flexibility that may come with that, without the burdens of having infrastructure and having a payroll and so on and so forth. I totally get that. That's a lifestyle choice. I respect it. That's difficult in and of itself. The people that I'm speaking to are the ones that want to build companies that can have community impact through job creation, that can at some point, the growth of their companies, to either sell it, sell a portion of it, that can have political capital as a result of the size and scope of their organization, because you got to be contributing to the tax base in order to be able to have meaningful conversations with people that impact change or affect change in our communities. And so that those are the entrepreneurs that I want to talk to, those that have that bigger vision in mind. And then there may be some that have never thought of it that way, that maybe they can be inspired to rethink their approach to business as a result of this conversation. But I'm going to say this, and this is not Terry's data. Go straight to the federal government if you want to, you know, check these numbers. But we have 3.1 million African-American-owned businesses in the United States. 35% of those businesses are female-owned companies. Of the 3.1 million African-American-owned businesses in the United States, only 135,000 have one employee outside of the owner or the founder. That is a very telling statistic in our communities. And I say this all the time. So what that means is that we're leaving a job in most cases and we're transitioning into job ownership. The issue with that is that there are some very, you know, defined constraints on being a solopreneur or running a micro enterprise. It doesn't bode well for our communities. It doesn't bode well for those founders in most cases, because there's a lot of risk involved with running a business in that manner over a long period of time. And we can get into that a little bit later. And so that's for me the foundational issue in our communities. Now, why does that exist from my perspective? Now I am speaking from my own experiences. In having consulted, coached, worked with, you know, brand development, strategic planning, business planning with literally hundreds of minority-owned businesses, and most of the small to medium-sized businesses that we work with are African-American female-owned. So we're particularly well-versed in that space, is that we don't even start with the end in mind. So it's kind of like if I decide that I want to build a house, and I'm building a house with no blueprint. I just go and start picking up materials and supplies from wherever I'm going to source it, and I'm just, hey, I'm going to build a house, right? And so what we have to start doing is thinking with the big picture in mind and then reverse engineering where we want to be 5, 7, 10, 12, 15 years down the line. If we start to take that approach, then what we'll realize is the focus isn't even necessarily the product or the service. Because in most cases, the product or service that we offer, it's a commodity, right? Like, very few people have something proprietary that is, like, actually unique. So your barbecue restaurant is probably not unique. You know, your coaching program is probably not unique. You know, you own a financial services firm, you're offering the same services that, you know, a million other companies are offering. What differentiates the companies that will grow and those that will be constrained are those that understand how to do three things, how to build infrastructure, how to build brands, and how to build people. If you can build infrastructure, I'm talking technological, financial infrastructure, administrative, legal, relationships, that gives you the growth capacity that you're going to need to go from your $250,000 business to your $500,000 business to your $1 million business, to your $5 million business, and so forth. You have the capacity, you have the scalability to do that. If you build a brand, then your brand will transcend your product or service. So even when you need to pivot because there's a pandemic or because some new legislation passed that is phasing your industry or your product or service out, you'll have the credibility in terms of your, whether it be your personal brand, your company's brand, or a combination of both, where you can pivot. And then the last is you have to have the capacity to build people. And I think in our communities, we forget that entrepreneurs are not just thought leaders. They have to be able to develop people. They have to be able to develop people that can replace them in their business. And if you don't have the capacity to do those three things, then what will happen is that you'll leave a job, and you may even experience an increase in income. You may have a little bit more control of your time. But what happens is that starts to become diminishing returns, right? And the blade starts to get dull because you're working 12, 16 hours a day in order to earn that flexibility, in order to earn that additional income. And you get to a point, and I deal with so many entrepreneurs that are at that point, where they are literally about to have a physical and or mental breakdown as a result of going at that pace for so long. And they know that they need to do something different. They know that they need to, you know, tear it down to rebuild it. But they don't have the luxury of stopping because, you know, that mortgage is due every month, right? And so right. And so I think that's the primary issue. And I don't mean to be so long-winded, but that's the primary issue in our community.
No, I love it. I mean, you just laid out a long foundation. And William, matter of fact, when you say where I pulled that from, it was actually a dialogue, again, that we had you on, but William was kind of showcasing a couple of situations on that actual private access, which was just the idea of, you know, in a sense, watching one of his family members keep a business for a lot of years and him having, in a sense, the forward thinking to say, you know, did we build this correctly? What's the asset? Can we transfer it? Kind of the things that you're talking about. And so as I listen to you lay out, if you will, those numbers of only 135,000 having, you know, more than one employee of black businesses in our community, I always highlight this one thing, that some of the stuff you're talking about, I can see and understand that it's kind of, in a sense, scary to do those things from the standpoint that a lot of us are great technicians, but not always the best business people. And that's not a knock. It's just starting to understand the things that you're talking about, Terry. So if you will, William, again, I know you could talk about it again from both aspects, but if you will, just kind of jump in and even talk about your understanding of those things that Terry talked about. Because as I look outside looking in, when he describes what you need to do to become, to get into that 135,000, is building an actual infrastructure that's building something where they can pass along or be able to pivot. Because I know you've pivoted several times in your business, so you basically have taken on those things that Terry has talked about. But if you will, brother, talk about like where you gain that understanding, or versus maybe somebody that's, you know, stuck in a solopreneur wanting to do it. Talk about that transition or what made you even figure that out, if that makes
right.
sense.
Right. Yeah, totally. I think Terry hit it on the head. I think the first thing you got to do is you got to identify who you're talking to, so you can know exactly what part of being an entrepreneur makes sense, if that makes sense, because there's levels to this entrepreneurial game, right? And if you kind of understand what he's saying, his target is more of a seasoned, maybe middle. His target is more of a person who's been in the game of entrepreneurial, being an entrepreneur for a while. I don't even like to use the word, as you can see, entrepreneur, because to me, that's a word that's used and people misunderstand, in my opinion, what being an entrepreneur is all about. To me, it's a mindset. It's more of a mindset to start with. And I honestly think what happens is us as black Americans, as black people, we get into the mindset of being an entrepreneur late in the game. And what happens is, if you even understand the term mom and pop shop, right, it's a very old idea of what having a small business is. It's a mom and pop shop, right? So that right there divides what, you know, small to medium sized business is versus a mom and pop shop. So because we get started late, the mentality or the understanding of what being an entrepreneur or owning business, and that's what I like to use that term, owning business, is more than entrepreneur. It's owning business. It's owning your business. And when you speak of being technical, Montoya, it's that's exactly what it is. Our educational system teaches us the technical or the technician approach to almost everything, because what they're doing is they're preparing us to be technicians in the field of business, right? And what we're going to do is we're going to go out there once we get the skill set of being that technician, we're going to go out there and sell that. So we're going to sell ourselves. We are a business, right, as a sole entity, right? You can look at yourself as a business. And essentially what you're doing is you're going out and selling your business, which is the technical application that you learn in the traditional way of education. That's what we're molded to do. We're not molded to own ourselves as a business entity and then grow that and understand that value and then bring people into that value. And that's what I think that's what Terry is kind of talking about. But we got to understand this mentality and this concept and why that is the case, why those numbers he gave is the case. And the main reason why those numbers are the way they are, in my opinion, is simply because we get a late start in understanding the concept of what ownership, you know, forget being an entrepreneur at the moment, right? That has a very distinct definition, which is just taking on more risk and organizing business. And that's very simple, right? We organize our personal business all the time. So we understand that concept of organizing business. We're just trying to scale that concept at the end of the day. So I like, and you know how I like to do, I like to make it make sense to people who aren't even necessarily in business, because a lot of what business is confusing, right? People use words and, you know, terms that somebody who is late in the game gets pushed away from because they just get nervous about a lot of the terms that are used. And again, us as Black Americans, we start very late in understanding the mindset of ownership, and that's what being an entrepreneur or owning your business, so to speak, is, if that makes sense. So I've seen, that being said, I wanted to start there. You have to identify kind of where you are in that evolution, right, because it is an evolution, right? Like Terry said, he focuses on people at one part of the evolution, but the evolution and the mindset of being an entrepreneur or owning your business has several different verticals. And unfortunately, we as Black Americans, we start the mindset of understanding, all right, I don't necessarily want to do this traditional way of owning my business, you know, which is going out and selling my technical expertise. I don't necessarily want to do it like that anymore. I want to own more of it because I see other people doing that. So how do I play? And if you're 25, 26, 27, 30 years old, 35, 40 years old, and you're just having that switch and your mind go off, then yes, you're behind the eight ball because you have to catch up, right? So probably.
So let me throw this out real quick. Let me throw this out.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jump back to Terry real quick before we go to break.
Go ahead.
So let me throw this out. And again, just maybe to get a perspective. So at least just some general information on business owners per se. It's still, in a sense, when you say we're late, if you will, I'm just going to say this again from this kind of a general standpoint. But to a degree, it's not uncommon for business owners to become business owners in their 40s. I'm just kind of just highlighting that age thing. So I want to be specific about late in the game on the mindset. And it's not even that I don't want to harp on it. Because, again, part of this dialogue today is to hopefully speed that up for some people. But just real quickly, got about a minute and a half before our next break. If you will, Terry, in reference to a lot of what y'all are talking about, you're always talking about job ownership versus job creation, if you will. So if you could just kind of introduce that before we go to break and maybe kind of develop it more after the break. But go ahead and jump into that. I think it definitely applies to that mindset thing that William is talking about. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, I think what's driving that primarily is three issues. Number one, in our communities, we think that entrepreneurship is the cure for career dissatisfaction. So if we're doing something and we feel undervalued, underpaid, we feel like we don't have control of our time, we feel like we're in political environments and cultures that aren't healthy for us, we think, well, you know what, let me just go be independent. And I'll absolve myself of having to deal with that. That's a myth. The second thing is that because we're undercapitalized as a community, we look at going into spaces that have a very limited barrier to entry, meaning I can take my skill set, maybe a little bit of capital, go register a domain name, and I'm in the game. Because obviously the internet, you know, something William said that I don't want to just gloss over, is that the whole concept of mom and pop has been turned on its head because small business is now global. So You know, there is no more mom and pop, because you can literally be operating out of your bedroom and be global and running an eight-figure business. It's very conceivable, and it happens every day. But it's still an anomaly. And so when we start thinking about, okay, well, what can I operationalize, we're usually going to want to deploy whatever our technical skill, whatever our credential is. And then the third thing is that because the Internet has opened it up, and a lot of us want to go into information-based businesses now because they tend to be, again, you know, low startup costs, low risk in a sense, we're trying to accelerate a process that could very well take 12 to 15 years to get to a 100%. Point of proficiency. But 100%. We think that we can buy someone's course or get a coach that's going to help us to bypass that process. And the truth 100%. Is, just like somebody has to go to medical school to become a doctor, they got to go to the police academy to become
process.
A police officer.
Yep. Process.
They got to go to...
Let's hit this break. And we'll continue this conversation, but that is an amazing point. Thank you, King. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today.
Each time I talk about the virtues of entrepreneurship, and I mention that entrepreneurship has the potential to give us time freedom, it has the potential for us to give us an asset base, and it can create intergenerational wealth for our children and grandchildren. A lot of people will jump in and start saying things like, well, entrepreneurship's not for everybody, Ron. Not everybody can be an entrepreneur. What would happen to all the employees if everybody became an entrepreneur? So these are the types of objections you start to get immediately. Now, here is my question to all of those people who come up with these objections. Did you ask yourself the same questions when you decided to go down the path of doing a degree and going for traditional employment? Did you ask yourself that if 90% of people become employees and 90% of people are doing similar degrees, is that going to have opportunities in the future? You see, a lot of you are so concerned about the fact that, you know, what if everybody becomes an entrepreneur, even though right now in the world, less than 10% of people become entrepreneurs. There is such a severe imbalance in favor of the fact that more and more people do degrees and become employees as opposed to become employers. And even then, it's amazing that majority of people, their attention goes on the fact that, oh my God, what if everybody becomes an entrepreneur? Well, have you ever thought about the fact that we have a long way to go before that actually happens? Right now, there is such a massive imbalance where there is an oversupply of employees and there is an undersupply of entrepreneurs. And rather than being concerned about the area which has an undersupply, why aren't you concerned about the area that has the oversupply? The oversupply is not in entrepreneurship. The oversupply is right now in the area of a lot of people graduating, doing degrees, and having an employee mindset. That's the problem we need to correct first. So don't be too concerned about the...
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, boss up, can everyone become entrepreneurs? Special guest, Terry Simmons, as well as William Agnew. I play a cut. It's pretty common, I think, in pushing the idea of people becoming entrepreneurs. And so there's a lot of perspectives I'm sure both of you heard, if you will, that is definitely worthy of talking about in this discussion. Again, someone obviously advocating for people in a sense to become entrepreneurs, and they are correct that worldwide only 10% of the population you know, are actual entrepreneurs. I will throw out just very briefly, and William, I'll actually start with you just to give a response to that. But I'll start out very briefly. There's a good reason why there's only 10%, and that's typically not discussed when people are pushing you to become an entrepreneur in the very vein that Terry was just talking about, the things that are not being considered when you're moving into the space. But any thoughts on that cut? Again, advocating for people to become entrepreneurs, but again, I think they're losing, they're not considering some things, if you will. But what are your thoughts, King?
Yeah, I think Terry was leading into it as we went for commercial break, and it is just, it's time, right? And that's kind of what I was leading into in terms of we start kind of late in the game, because you can't substitute experience, and experience is the variable in experience is just time. That's the reason why, you know, people do internships and things of that nature, is to speed up the process, and there's things you can do to speed that process up, because it is indeed the idea of entrepreneur, being an entrepreneur, owning your business, right, is something that takes time. And so if we focus on the time part of it, yes, you can start a business in your 40s, no doubt, right? But don't think that starting the business in your 40s is going and getting that thing that Terry was talking about, getting that training, right, and understanding these concepts and seeing other people do it as a substitute for the time piece. You're going to need that time piece and that dedication. And the problem, even I've had this problem in my experience, you know, I like to speak from experience. I started late in the game in terms, you know, just like I told you guys in the very beginning, I did the traditional route. I went to corporate America. I was, you know, corporate America was very good to me, but when I transitioned out of corporate America in my, you know, late 20s, right, I couldn't substitute. There was nothing that was going to substitute the experience of time to get me to the place of success that I had to do. And essentially, I had to go from making six figures, right, six figures in corporate America, I had to step that all the way back. And what Terry's talking about, I'm very small to medium-sized business. So at one point when I started, I was actually paying my employees more than I was taking home. And that's very common for people who start businesses at a certain level, right, because that is the sacrifice of time that you have to make. And I was doing that at 30, 35, you know, years old. So I had to step all the way back out of my comfort zone, all the way back, because I had to understand, number one, I was mature enough to understand the mindset that I couldn't eat and give at the same time. I was old enough to I was mature enough to understand that because I came from the corporate environment. But this is what you can't sacrifice. This is where the time element is, because if you can start that, the earlier you can start that, obviously you get more time. And when you settle into creating the things that you need, such as the personal development, the understanding of capital, the understanding of the things that you need to grow your business properly, time is a very, very important asset in the percentage of success in a business in doing that. So, you know, I think that kind of answers your question. I don't want to be long-winded.
No, absolutely does. Absolutely does. Terry, definitely want to have you just kind of jump on what you're hearing. I'm pretty sure hearing that brother break down his experience of, as he said, paying employees sometimes even more than he does is definitely different than the mindset that people think of when you hear, in a sense, because that was basically an advertisement I just played, if you will, for entrepreneurship. And, you know, one thing that advertisement leaned on, which is part of, let's talk about it from both ends, part of what William is talking about in a sense of being behind. So we've talked about, I think I've had you on the show, and we've talked about this concept within in the African-American community specifically, that we kind of lived on get a good education, get a good job, and you'll be fine. Like, we leaned on that in a sense too long within our culture, to the extent that we, as it was kind of slightly mixed in that advertisement, that people graduate and become workers or whatever. There was a time where that was a very successful way to be successful and, in a sense, have the American dream. Our community coming into the workforce even later, if we want to be honest about the history of this country, kind of leaned on that too long, especially when there was an opportunity to go to college, if you will. So now people are trying to balance it out. I got too much, debt from a college, or I want to go to technical school instead, or The big other push is to jump into entrepreneurship, but they're jumping in without ever having the concept that they might have to pay their employees more. To jump in thinking, I'll be the boss, I'll take the chunk of it, and go from there. Jump in, King, again, I just wanted to just kind of bring it full circle with some of the concepts we have, with how they're, while it's a good to push into entrepreneurship, the wrong expectations can actually kill your opportunity to be successful, from what I can tell. But go ahead, King.
Yeah, having that expectation of an immediate return is 99.999% unrealistic. Now, to address the clip that you played, you know, during the break, and some of what, you know, both you and William had to say. So I live a duality where I'm a huge advocate. Companies are huge advocate for entrepreneurs and business owners, independent. But then on the other side of the house, we work with some of the largest companies in the world to help them to position their employer brands and build their workforce. So I see both sides. And I would say to team colleges diminishing returns, look, I understand that salaries have not kept pace with inflation. That's an undeniable fact. However, dollar for dollar, if you look at those people that earn not only just a livable wage, but a wage where they can live comfortably, disproportionately, those people have gone to college. So our issue as a community is that we don't study the trends. We don't see where a particular industry and occupation is heading, where the demand is heading, and where we're going to get the most bang for our buck in terms of a degree. So, of course, you're not going to get the same return on investment for a liberal arts degree that you are going to get for a chemical engineering degree. There's nothing profound about that. So from my vantage point, a lot of us would benefit from being intrapreneurs before we become entrepreneurs. So what would that look like? That would look like having a very strong sense of self-awareness and knowing what my authentic vocation is, seeing, okay, in that particular industry, that particular occupation, what education do I need to acquire so that, you know, 5 to 7 years in, I can have that six-figure salary. Work that job, build your personal credit, set up the legal infrastructure for that you want to eventually start and grow. Start building a financial profile for that business. You leverage your job to build the relationships and the credibility that can come from that. And then when you transition into your business, maybe you have assets, maybe you have financial capital, a personal brand, and relationships that you can now extend to your business that will give you a much higher likelihood of success. And so that's the reason why I'm not on team demonizing a job, because if you're saying that you want to be an entrepreneur and a business owner, then by default, at some point, you're saying you want to employ people. So it seems to be a bit of a contradiction to live by the mantra that working for someone is by default putting you at a disadvantage. Well, no, that's not true. There are lots of people that create wealth by making $87,000 a year, keeping their overhead manageable, redirecting the surplus in the right places, be it financial vehicles, real estate, insurance products. And in their late 30s, early 40s, they're millionaires on paper. Now, their transition into entrepreneurship is going to look much different than the person that's bootstrapping, because they're going to be able to take a look at, well, you know what? I think a Smoothie King franchise would be great in this location. And they're going to have the, you know, net worth that it takes in order to qualify to be a franchisee. They're going to have the financial capital. They're going to be able to bring in the investors. See, that's a different type of entrepreneurship than I think I can cook, so I'm just going to rub some pennies together and start a food truck. But you have no culinary background. You have no credentials. You have no experience working in a restaurant or working in a hotel or working for a catering company. So the amount of money that you would have spent on that formal education, and let's just say even the money that you may have lost by working for someone, you're gonna expend that same amount of energy and resources making mistakes in business that you could have quite possibly avoided if you would have taken a different approach. So I think we just have to change our approach and our strategy, what that progression looks like. We are celebrating team. I walked off my job because my boss didn't value me, and we're sensationalizing that too much. And that's not always the
best. Absolutely. No, absolutely. Let me do this. Let me shoot to another break, and I want to highlight that part because I think right now we're talking about the nitty-gritty and transitioning and what that looks like and why we hear those stories. Let's talk about why we hear those stories. Like you say, we are sensationalizing, but there's a reason why we're hearing those stories, and it's not that they're incorrect. So stay from the break, and you'll kind of hear why we're hitting on that, because, again, we're talking about what it really takes to be an entrepreneur for anyone looking to become one. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
On Saturday, 4 p.m., November the 11th, Lulu Events presents a play asking the ultimate questions. Why should I get married? Join us for a tale of love and marriage and a different kind of date night with good food, good drinks, and a celebration of longtime married couples leading by example. Tickets are only $25. Please visit eventbrite.com and search in Georgia for Why Should I Get Married. Limited seating, so order your tickets now and catch this night full of love, power, and agreement. Saturday, 4 p.m., November the 11th, Why Should I Get Married?
We have founders of some of the world's biggest companies that started those companies in their early 20s. I get that. Those people are unicorns. They're phenoms. It's almost impossible to recreate that or to manufacture that. Most people need lived experience. And in business...
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guests William McAdoo and Terry Simmons. And you hear a cut from Terry talking about those phenomenons being unicorns. And so with anything in life, the books that become bestsellers when somebody tells you their story, it's because the story is unique, is why it becomes a bestseller. If you had every person that's in business write a book, they wouldn't be bestsellers, because prior to the break, Terry was breaking down being an intrapreneur, if you will. It also leads to the number I highlighted earlier for why, in a sense, when you look at the average business owner, in a sense, start coming out and being in business at their 40s, if you will, late 40s quite often, is because they've done exactly what Terry talked about. That's not a glamorous story, nor would you take to it, nor would you follow it. And so that's what the sensationalization is coming from. It's someone pushing and saying, hey, you too can be a unicorn, and absolutely unrealistic, or if for most people, again, you're not going to be the unicorn. And Terry harped on the opportunity cost lost in trying to figure it out. The jumping out there too soon versus getting the credibility and doing it the way most business owners, as he said, already have the capital, which changes how you come into business. You can come into business with a training program versus getting into business and realizing, oh, I'm not taking care of my customer service because I don't have a training program. Now that I got two employees, I'm having to teach them myself, and now there are people coming into my restaurant talking about how bad the service is because you don't have a training program. Speaking of restaurants in Atlanta, that's a hot button item right now. Terry, I'll let you kind of, you were going for the break, so jump back in, but I think I'm hitting right on where you were headed. So go ahead, King. Just kind of take us off of there.
Yeah, we sensationalize the step out on faith model. And I'm not trying to say that, look, as an entrepreneur, that has to be baked into your DNA, because yes, on some level you're creating something from nothing, and you don't know how the market is going to respond to your product or service. You don't know how they're going to respond to your brand, no matter how much research you do. So I understand that on some level, from a personal standpoint, you have to be rooted in your faith, but that's not a business plan. okay? At the end of the day, if we have the opportunity to be a lot more strategic about how we transition into business, and that's what we want to do. And I think the other piece is that, and this is not going to be popular, but this is my observation, and I would challenge anyone to show me otherwise. The most iconic entrepreneurs in our – all we got to do is go look at the list of black billionaires in the United States if we need an anecdotal data point. The most iconic entrepreneurs in our communities disproportionately make their money from sports and entertainment. So what they're doing is they're leveraging the platform that they have as an entertainer or as a professional athlete, and they're extending that credibility, that brand, to a product or service. But they don't have to figure out the manufacturing on that. They don't have to figure out the distribution on that. They don't have to figure out the technology on that. They're not hiring and firing employees. They're not touching that business on a daily basis. So what we try to do is become micro celebrities and micro influencers and basically mirror that particular model. And that's a low percentage play. That's the reason why a lot of people are frustrated with social media. Case in point, you go look at my Instagram. I might have, I don't know, 2,200 followers. And my organization cranks out a ton of content, not only for our organization, but for clients. But my 2,200 yields a seven-figure business, and it's not based on my personal brand because we actually have a business model in place. But what we do is we're like, okay, well, this comedian or this professional athlete or this, you know, Instagram personality, this influencer, this is how they went about building their online boutique, or this is how they went about building their training business, or this is how they went about building their restaurant. And you can't duplicate that model because you don't have that fame to leverage. And so many of us try to go create that fame and then extend it to our businesses, but it's a low percentage play. You wouldn't have to take that approach if you really understood how to build a company from the bottom up. And again, as William was saying, you know, that there's no substitute for time and experience. And I think we keep trying to, as a community, look, we can't go a week without there being some social media personality beef because some real estate guru or some, you know, somebody that sells courses on whatever, how to build credit, whatever, frauded our community, and now they're being exposed. Well, okay, it's a good thing that they're being exposed, but at some point the market has to hold itself accountable. What keeps happening? The reason why they can continue to defraud our community is because we're impatient as a community, and we keep trying to find something that can take what should take 9 years and compress it into 90 days. And it's so we just keep on getting taken advantage of. But, you know, I can't talk till I'm blue in the face on this.
All this stuff matters. So I love it. For anybody out there that's listening in, I see a caller out there. If you want to get in, press 1 to get in on this discussion or ask a question. If you're online, the number to get in is 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691. You can't bypass the years. You keep both talking about that, William. What is building a business from bottom up actually look like? And the reason I'm asking that question, as a matter of fact, let's do this. I got a caller that wants to jump in, so let's make sure we get to the caller, okay. Then we'll start. Yes. I'll kind of ask you that question after the caller. Okay. Area code 614, last 3857. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents or question on this morning's discussion question.
I don't think I have to say my name. I think my voice will do it. What's going on, guys? This is Dwayne.
Hey, what's up, Dwayne? My God. Thank you for getting in on this discussion this morning. I'm going to keep you on for as long as you let me keep you on, brother. But what you got for us this morning?
Bro, I just like Terry Simmons don't realize. He my Grant Cardone. Like, you know what I mean? He talking about his social media. He can take that to wherever he want to. I follow him. Like, he's my Grant Cardone, bro. Like, he's my black Grant Cardone. I watch him every day. Like, we always even chopping about the outfits he wear. He's teaching me how to dress.
Man,
I thought one day I was going to call him about his outfit. He came back at me like, "Nah, dog,
gonna,
I'm the outfit
you
king.
You're a celebrity after this show, Terry. You're going to be a celebrity after this show."
Come on, man. Look, let me say this before Dwayne says what he has to say. What I love about this platform is that as African-American men, we can suppress our egos and give people their flowers, you know, while they can still smell them. I appreciate that, brother, because your business is amazing, You don't know how many people that are looking to develop outdoor living spaces. I'm like, screenshot this. This is the brother you need to reach out to. So, yeah, man, I appreciate it. I thank you.
Yeah. Dog, it's just an honor just to be talking with you guys, man. One of the big things I want to say is that I'm hearing everybody saying it, and it's so true, is you have to develop that time. One of the things that I don't necessarily agree with is feeling like it's too late into your 40s. I feel like I probably would have been in a better position financially if I waited to my 40s to have gotten in, or maybe late 30s to have gotten into business. I'd have been better. I think in the early years, I was just in the fact of desperation. I didn't want to get a job. I didn't like how they treated black people at work. I didn't feel like I'll ever get advancement. So the only way I'm going to do this is I'm going to get out here and become this entrepreneur. And all we did was just fight the waves. I mean, you fight the battle. You fight the uphill. You have sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. But really, as you get older, your mind gets smarter. Like, I make better decisions now in my mid-40s than I made in my mid-30s. And so now I'm seeing the business structure grow. I'm seeing the network system grow. Everything is growing because I'm making better decisions. I also have that time behind me, like Terry was saying, is you get this time that you've gotten through all the BS. You learn how to do all the banking. You learn how to do the insurance. You understand the political spectrums. Like, you know, I'm hanging out with the mayors now. You know what I mean? You learn how to get those political spectrums and get that stuff moving. You mean to get your business growing. So it does take time. And that's my
No, absolutely.
Yes,
no,
I love it.
I think that's why it was so good that we're having this conversation, because at the end of the day, I hope people that are listening to how we're, in a sense, massaging it, if you will, massaging what that time looks like. And that's personally why, even when William said, hey, we're getting behind in time, and again, I think he's, you know, I'll let him kind of speak for himself, but even that's why I brought out that generally speaking, a lot of entrepreneurs on average are jumping in the game in their 40s, but they have done what Terry talked about. And then here you are, kind of did the leap of faith thing, you know, knowing your story, Dwayne, from a young age. You're now saying, in retrospect, I probably could have done this better had I not leap of faith at the time that I did. So I think it is very pertinent that people get to listening to someone with the actual experience saying, you know what, I might have could have done this smarter, and really consider what you're talking about. But William, if you will, let's jump in there and kind of clarify.
Yeah,
I'm just going to say clarify, just kind of add to that conversation.
No question. Dwayne, he totally hit the mark on the head. I think for me, when I'm speaking, my audience, it's like, who am I talking to? And I think collectively, and I agree with Dwayne, I think collectively we start late. I think individually there is no late, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Because individually what I found is it's the person. And as you do mature and as you do get more seasoned, you understand the sacrifices that you need to make. So that comes with the wisdom as an individual. So, yes, Dwayne, who is built that way, and he understands now because he's had the experience and he's mature and he's got the wisdom, he now understands that even starting at 40, he understands what sacrifices he has to make to catch up to the people who started way before him, your competition, right, other people. When you're looking at those people in a comparison, contrast kind of thing, now you understand, okay, I can't do what he's doing, but I know what I can do because I'm wise and mature, and I know the sacrifices I have to make to catch up to where he is. You can do that individually. When I'm talking to a collective, right, such as the black family, right, as a family, right, we start too late because we need to understand those nuances early, which gives us the advantage also, because everybody can't do it the way Dwayne did it, because everybody's not as seasoned or mature or as or understands what sacrifices to make at that age to catch up, if that makes sense. So
it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. Let me give a quick example and go to the top of the hour break, if you will. But it makes a lot of sense from this standpoint. Even when Terry was referencing understanding a particular degree that's going to, in a sense, bring you more money, people can understand that. We don't always take advantage of that, to his point. But I think to fit into what you're saying, if you have business in mind, then put certain skill sets, certain degrees can line you up. And so to your point, William, it's having the discussions of what that looks like, not just go get the degree and get the job per se. It's, okay, you want to have a business, so this is the particular degree. So you're kind of talking about having those conversations much sooner, in a sense, if you're a parent over your, in a sense, with your kid, having the dialogue about what business looks like versus just letting them get the degree and the job and not start setting up, as Terry said, setting up the business, knowing that one day you're going to leverage your knowledge into your own business. So I think that's what you're talking about. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Psychologist Dr. Gerald Hassel and Omar Buckner, founders of Self Mastery Retreats International, is proud to present a transformative experience specifically designed by black men for black men. This immersive retreat offers a unique opportunity for black men to forge deep bonds, enhance their personal growth, and empower themselves to create positive change in their lives, families, and communities. For 5 days in the sacred surroundings of Puerto Morales, Mexico, a select group of powerful black men will embark on a journey of self-discovery, creating a safe and supportive space to share their experience and build a strong sense of community. This trip will truly transform your life and takes place February the 15th through 19th, 2024. If interested, text SELFMASTERY to 678-548-2456. Again, that is SELFMASTERY to 678-458-2456 to receive a direct link for the retreat.
Everybody get paid before the boss. If you work for the right person, think about it.
The business going to get paid because you ain't bringing the inventory out in without paying them. You got a brick-and-mortar location, you're paying that lease. You're paying the utilities. You're paying for the security system. You're paying for the internet access. You're going to pay your liability insurance. Some people that may be going after government contracts, you got to pay that. You got to pay your workers' comp policy. All that's getting paid. If you're advertising and marketing, that's getting paid. Whatever contractors that you got working for you are vendors, they're getting paid. If you got employees, they're getting paid. You have to build the capacity to be able to take home that six or seven figure salary without debilitating the business. That's the reason why it confuses me when people say they got a six figure business, but then they say they got a six figure income. How? So you're stealing from the business, but you're stealing from yourself. Because if you're paying yourself $150 and the business does $500,000, you probably need to be paying yourself $70 and that other $80 needs to be reinvested into the company. A lot of people that's trying to...
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, boss up, can everyone become entrepreneurs? As we play another cut from Terry Simmons, that's what you will get on his social media, as Brother Duane called into the show and talked about. He follows this brother. I follow this brother. He will give you a lot of game via social media. But I would actually, if Duane, let me see, Duane, you got to still got a second? I want to ask you something real quick about that cut. If you're not busy, I see you still on the line.
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm still here.
Okay, cool. As I hear Terry kind of break down that, making sure everybody else is straight, the boss gets paid last. You know, you and I have had a couple of intensive conversations about what that has looked like for you in running your business. I have another friend I've had on the show before, Smoke Garrett, talking about. Like at one time a senator actually even came out to his business or whatever and was shutting down a lot of his contracts, and his whole goal for the 2 years was making sure payroll was met and having to explain to his wife things are going to be a little different for him for the next couple of years. So that's something that a lot of times that's not considered when people are saying jump into this entrepreneur game. So I would love to hear a quick thought on Terry breaking that down with the boss getting paid last. Just your thoughts as a real live in the game, successful entrepreneur now.
Let me flip it up a little bit. Is what I did was different, because I did that for a long time. Like I wouldn't pay myself, I'd always pay everybody else, and I was always struggling. And then I learned, like, anything, if you're going to be successful in anything, you got to pay yourself first. Okay. Now, paying yourself this big high salary, super high paychecks and things like that, and your business is not turning revenue, that's you're gonna ultimately take the business into the hole. There's a balance in that. What I did was I picked up this book called Profit First, and it taught me how to break down the funds as it came in. Now, if your business is down in a low period, it doesn't mean you don't you stop paying yourself. You just take a percentage of that and pay yourself that percentage. At least that percentage can get you your fuel in your cars, your car payments done, keep your credit on track, keep your mortgage and everything paid, and, you know what I mean, live a decent life. Because if you just work, one thing I learned too, if you're just working to pay bills, it's going to get old really fast. I heard one of these guys, I think it was Terry, talking earlier, and he was stating, like, you get to the point where you're burned out. And if you're just working and you're just working to pay somebody's bills or pay payroll, you're going to get burned out really fast. I mean, you think you can handle it, but after a while, it's going to be enough. So what I say is, if you're slow or you're not at your numbers and you're still paying people, always figure out a percentage and take a little bit off to cover the nut and cover a little bit of fun. You mean cover, you mean an event to go out to eat or cover a little bit to go take on a trip. Like, I mean, one thing my wife and I do is everything we buy is through a credit card, everything. Like, I swipe the card, pay the card, swipe the card, pay the card, everything. So I got points everywhere. You mean, like, my daughter and her boyfriend is actually coming here for Thanksgiving. We just looked up American Airlines, boom, pay points. I paid $11 for taxes, boom, done. Like, it just depends on how you do it. You can actually live a decent life. And that's something that takes time. That's something that goes back to what we were talking about. It's time over business. When you first in business, you're frantic, you're chasing, you're struggling, you don't know what to do. But after a while, you get into it, you know how to balance and play with the balancing act of the business. So I would say that's the part I'll add to it.
No, I love it. I love that ad because I've heard you personally tell me about how, in a sense, that transition made you finally really enjoy doing business in the system. Because, again, you got the DNA. You were built for it. You're not going to do anything else. It's just kind of who you are. But it transitions you to what you're talking about now. So it's definitely worth part of discussion. Terry, any thoughts to what Dwayne is saying in regards to your cut and what he had to say about it?
And what Dwayne said is spot on. To add to it, of course, you can't live off sweat equity. Right? You have to have some actual financial capital at some point to run your household and run your life. The entrepreneurs that I was referencing specifically with that clip are those that don't understand the difference between income and dividend, income and profit. So as an employee of my company, okay, Dwayne as an employee of his company, William as an employee of his company, they all have an operational role in their company for which they should pay themselves, for which I should pay myself, what the fair market value is for that skill set given the size of my company. So let's just say if I didn't work for Orange Strategy, if I didn't own Orange Strategy and I was the VP of market, you know, a mid-market company, or if I was the, you know, VP of workforce development for a mid-market company, now let's just say if my salary would be $150,000, I'm just pulling a figure out of the air, then if my company is doing $1.2 million, $1.8 million, $5 million, and I'm paying myself 3x what I would get paid out in the open market, then that's what I mean when I say you're potentially stealing from yourself. Because your salary should be, again, what the fair market value is for that scope of work, that skill set, that role. Now, what you pay yourself in terms of dividends or profit is a different conversation. So it's a process by which we have to separate our operational role from our ownership. Mm-hmm. Those are two totally different things. And I think what happens is, as owners, because we have direct access to the business bank account and the personal bank account, we can often overextend ourselves personally because we have access to the capital. And maybe it doesn't totally debilitate the business. It may still function. But what happens is, now you picked up this new contract that needs to be capitalized, but you don't have it because you're taking it home. When if you would have took home the 120 instead of the 180 over the past 4 or 5 years, maybe you would have had that access capital to make that strategic hire or to run the marketing campaign or to bring in the new technology or upgrade your equipment. So that's what I was referencing. People who
– oh, no, absolutely. Again, this is why we're having a dialogue, right, to talk about it from all sides of it. So love what Dwayne brought to the table. And then the specifics that you're talking about, I could only imagine that the period that William went through in his 30s when he mentioned, I'm possibly, you know, in a sense, paying the employers more than myself, was him being strategizing for long term. So if you will, William, jump in, because it sounds like you understood exactly what Terry is distinguishing right now. I would assume that's why you did what you did at the time, but please expand on that if you will.
Absolutely. And here's the thing, as you continue to build businesses and brands, such as what Terry is talking about, it starts over and you have to do it again and again and again. Let me put some hard numbers. I'm going to give you guys an example.
Absolutely.
I'm going to give you some numbers of my most recent experience. So I have a new business and some business partners, right? And it's three of us. And we started a wrap business, car wrap. Some of you guys may be familiar with the car wrap business, right? The build out to get started, right, just putting hard numbers to it, the build out was about $250,000 build out. So that right there, if you're filtering people out, most people get filtered out, right? Because what we don't have is we don't have the means to actually either borrow or have saved or leverage any source of income to start a $250,000 business. That's number one. So you got to have that. So once you build that out, now if you understand the car wrap business, it's a highly skilled, highly technical business, which means ain't no solopreneurship in that. You have to hire skilled technicians that know how to do that job properly, right? And there's a very high level expectation of the customer for what that product or that service is. So you have to hire these highly skilled techs. I call them mercenaries, right? Because they're highly skilled, which means you have to pay them well. So in that, we have about 13 people on staff, right? About 13 people, probably 8 or 9 of which are highly paid, very well paid techs, right? On top of that, you have to have enough space. So that building, right, it costs us about $3,000 per month for the building and the space that we need. So what else we got? We got all the utilities, the expenses, all of that stuff that you guys know what comes with business. Now, what I want to tell you is 70% of our cost is labor, 70% every month of what we make. Our gross revenue goes to paying our technicians. Now, we generate, again, just to put people can understand, every month we generate about $200,000 gross per month. So at the end of that month, right, 70% is labor, and then you got everything else. So I'll give you guys the annual, right? Annually, we do about $2.5 million in gross sales, right? Every month of that $200,000 that we make, that we generate, we hold on. The net, anybody want to guess what the net is of that $200,000?
Probably about 30,
I'm going to guess 5.
It's about $35,000. So we net $35,000 a month that we generate. So then we have to split. Here's the crazy thing. Now, what are you going to do with that $35,000 net, right, when you have three investors? Right? So this is what business is. It looks nice, right? And Montoya's familiar with my most recent business, which is the car wrap business. Looks great, looks nice, looks like we're doing really well. And we are, right? The business is running itself, it's growing, right? So there's no money that has to be put into it. Now with that being said, the first 5 months, right, we had to add, I'd say maybe 8 months, we had to add 50,000. We were negative 50,000 every month. So it took 8 months for us to break even, right? We had to continue to pay our employees. We couldn't miss payroll, right? We had to sacrifice ourselves, right? And we had to add $50,000 to the business 8 to 9 months. And it got to the point where we were like, we don't even know if this makes sense, but we're going to keep trucking. We're going to keep doing what we got to do, right, to make it make sense. And through the blessings of the man upstairs, we got a business account that allowed us to then break even on that, right? Come back to in the black, right? Big account with a big company, and that was just a blessing. But it took. What I want people to understand is the show is the show. The show is always going to be the show. The numbers are a different animal. You know what I mean? And a lot of it depends on what industry you're in. Right, what the demand is, what the cost is. When you talk about our business, we got the cost of inventory, which is wrap,
which is the wrap vinyl. That's expensive. We got the cost of labor. That's expensive. We got the marketing. That's expensive. And this is every business. Every business to some extent, and this is what Terry's talking to. I just want to help you guys understand the numbers so we can put some real numbers to it and make it make sense. You can generate a lot of money every month. You can generate tons of money every month. The question is, how much of that money are you holding on to? And then that money that you hold on to, what are you doing with it, or what do you have to do with it? Right? Does that make sense?
And you have to do with it in regards to the business being successful in the moment, but even more so sustaining itself in long term. And Terry's
exactly.
always, if you follow him, talking about you can't just, if you keep saying take that money home, are you not reinvesting it in, oh, the dentistry is, I'm doing good now, but it's going in a new direction. Should I be
exactly.
reinvesting in this new strategy that's coming? So I would like to take home this new some of this money that we got with this new contract, but in reality,
right.
if I'm going to sustain this for later, I'm going to have to reinvest. We're up against
right.
another break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today.
And then, so that's the first, simple versus complex. And then the second category scheme would be something like managerial/administrative versus entrepreneurial. And the entrepreneurial types, actually, they're over with the artists. So the best predictor for entrepreneurial success, first is IQ, but second is trait openness, which is the creativity dimension.
Mm.
So entrepreneurial types tend to be very high in trait openness. And so that sets them with the artist and also with the political liberals, because the best predictor of political liberalism is trait openness.
Right.
So the managers and administrative types, they tend to be conservative, and the entrepreneurial and creative types tend to be liberal.
Mm.
And so if you're an entrepreneur, you're going to be a lateral thinker. And so you'll be the sort of person, if you hear an idea, that will trigger off a whole bunch of other ideas. And you'll be motivated primarily by interest in pursuing your ideas. But your downfall is likely to be organizational administrative ability. So it's often useful for entrepreneurial types to pair themselves with managerial and administrative types.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, boss up, can everyone become entrepreneurs? If you're online and want to get in on this discussion, please give us a call at 646-787-1691. As we just hear a cut from Peterson, psychologist, discussing the actual traits of entrepreneurs. And so we've kind of made mention to that. Dwayne's on the line talking, it's in his DNA. It's in your DNA. William, you were pulled, doing very well corporate. A lot of people would never even make that leap. You had to be put in the game. We heard a stat, 10% of entrepreneurs, like in America, 10% of are full-time entrepreneurs. When you add part-time, it goes to 16%. So the majority of our country, in a sense, quote-unquote, works for someone else. I'm not labeling that a bad thing. I'm just highlighting that a lot of times when there's this push for everyone to jump in it, we're not realistic about the numbers of actually who's actually skilled to do it. And then we also got the beauty on this conversation, William just breaking down his actual numbers of his latest successful business at $2.5 million a year. Sounds amazing. If you've never been in business, you would think the take home is much more than what he laid out in the last segment. Terry, just kind of jump in where you fit in, because I think we have to talk about the actual skill set for people out there being pushed to jump into entrepreneurship, because to your point earlier, William's not having a rap business start to have some success, get to $2.5 million, and now selling a course and say, I can show you how to do this too. He's still in it to win,
right,
building it long term,
right,
even when eight months in. Yeah, go ahead, brother.
I was just going to say, Terry, before you jump in, I want to clean that up too, because I don't want people to think negative in regards to the numbers that I gave, because it sounds like, man, that's a lot of work for a little bit of gain. But you got to understand what the benefit is of that. Now you are in a position, right? You can't just look at what the take home is, right? You have to understand what the value of the asset that you've created is. Number one, you're generating $200,000 a month in sales. That can be leveraged. You're generating $2.5 million in gross revenue annually. That can be leveraged. You got a positive cash flow of $35,000 every month. That can be leveraged. You have a customer acquisition tool that you're gaining more customers. So now you can add more product lines. As Terry talked about, from a branding perspective, you can now use that brand. You can leverage that brand. You can bring on more products. You can bring on more services. So I don't want to leave it where I kind of left it, where you think, man, that's a lot of sacrifices. Because it is. Entrepreneurship, guys, if you think you're going to work less as an entrepreneur than you work as a traditional employee, you're very well mistaken. It's going to be a lot of sacrifices, right? You're going to sacrifice a lot of time.
No, I love it. I'm glad to clean it up. Let me do this. I'm going to go because I want to jump Terry.
Okay,
here.
Go ahead.
I'm glad you cleaned it up because in your cleaning it up, I'm sorry to cut you off, if you will, but in your cleaning it up, we're also hearing what your focus and mindset is. So that's what's the beauty of understanding what it actually takes to be in this game. Like I said, you're not jumping out here trying to sell a course and say you could do this too. You're still focused on the very things you talked about. And like you said, cleaning it up and saying, here's what I plan to leverage because I understand these things about business. Go ahead, Terry.
And I want to add something to all of the gems that Dwayne dropped about the financial model, especially for those of you out there that are listening that are in business or professional services, and you want to do business either with the federal government, state government, local government, or with larger corporations that are looking to do business with minority-owned businesses. There are two things that will position your company to acquire those large six, seven-figure, eight-figure contracts if you're in something like construction or whatever. Number one, before we even get into what you're proposing, there's going to be that executive summary that is going to position your company in terms of the people that work for it, that lead that company, their skill set, their history of performance, their credentials. So going back to the conversation about being an entrepreneur before becoming an entrepreneur, that past performance in other people's businesses becomes something that you can leverage for your own. The second thing is that they want to know before they even care about what you're going to deliver, how fast, what the price is going to be, is whether or not your company is financially solvent enough to do business with them. Mm-hmm. So just to make that plain, I have four contracts right now that are either with a governmental entity or a Fortune 5 or Fortune 100 company. And each one of those instances, we have to be able to float that contract for anywhere from 60 to 120 days before we get reimbursed for direct expenses or before we get paid for our professional services. If I took home as much of a salary as I could in theory, then I would not have the financial solvency at this point in our progression to be able to go after those deals. Because I try to stay as debt-free as I can. I understand that there's good debt, but we don't have time to get into that. So I wanted to add that, is that it's not just self-deprivation for the sake of self-deprivation.
Right.
It's being financially responsible so that you can then redirect those resources into aspects of your business that can help you to be scalable, okay? Now, in terms of the characteristics conversation, because a lot of times in our community, we talk about characteristics that are somewhat innate, we like to talk about creativity, right? The hustler, you know, that person is resourceful. We like to talk about creativity. We like to talk about charisma. And all of those are innate qualities that most entrepreneurs possess. But those other qualities that you need to have that are more skill-based, again, you have to acquire those skills through. In other words, no one can innately read a P&L. That's not how that works. You learn how to read a P&L. You learn how to develop administrative practices. You learn how to lead people.
We got a young listener. Sorry to do that, but just for anybody, because we got some young listeners, profit and loss, which says P&L. But go ahead, sorry.
You know, and even though you may be able to inspire people, so you may have some innate leadership qualities, that's only one aspect of leading a team of people, because leadership and management are kind of two different things. We don't have enough time to go into that. So you have to develop both leadership and management skills. You have to develop the ability to assess data that's in front of you and make informed decisions based on that data. And so those are the qualities that we tend to not talk enough about, and we like to focus on those that are, you know, just more sexy and more innate. And so a lot of times our entrepreneurs will be self-described or described in the media as people who, you know, were creative, they hustlers, you know, they obviously, you know, they usually are inspirational communicators, and we don't talk enough about that individual that knows how to develop processes, that knows how to develop protocols, that knows how to manage a team of people. When I say manage, I mean managing people's talents, their time, their motivations, evaluating them, development, all of that. We don't talk about that. You know, and so we're going to glorify the person that says, I just started shipping wigs out of my bedroom, and, you know, I'm making $3 million a year, and I don't touch the product. I don't have any employees. Look, great if you can do that. Great if you can do that. But there are millions of services and products that don't back into that model, as Dwayne just described, a perfect example. And so most of us are going to have to do those things that I just described, that William described, that Dwayne described, and that even Montalia has alluded to in his questions. And we need to, as a community, start focusing on how do we get that education. So we have too many people that are saying, here's how you generate leads. Here's how you sell. Here's how you position yourself on social media. That stuff is necessary. I get it. Too many people that's telling you how to buy a Range Rover and put it in your business name. Most of us don't even need to be looking for tax write-offs, but I'm not going to go into that. Because what we do is we make the business look anemic on paper, and we wonder why we can't go get capital to grow. But that's a whole different conversation. What we need to start talking about are those characters.
Again, just putting it into this matters, again, from the dialogue of what it sounds like for real versus what's being pushed in the culture, if you will, and speaking to understanding, like you said, the difference in leadership and management. I only paid a small portion of the Peterson cut, but I'll just highlight this. The other part of the cut that he was talking about in those skill sets, he was highlighting how management typically has a completely different skill set or innate abilities, if you will, I should say, than what entrepreneurs typically have. So to your point, if you're going to build a scalable business that's going to have employees, if you will, then it absolutely requires the understanding of, okay, here's what I need, here's what I am, and he said at the end of the cut that I played, positioning yourself with someone who's going to have their organization and having the ability to hire the appropriate person for management, because they don't have that same innate ability that you have. You are, in a sense, the creator. Like you said, the entrepreneurs are typically on the artist scale with their creativity. But to your point, we're highlighting that such that they're saying, okay, you got what you need to jump in business. And you're like, hold up. That's a very unique story if that's the only way that you're going to be successful. And please don't think you can copy, as to your point, the celebrity and sports figure model. It's a credit to their ability to have people position themselves next to them and use them as the face to push something. That is what you're going to see in overabundance in business, but the reality is 20% of business remains after 10 years.
most of those businesses are not. Go ahead. Yeah, please jump in.
Yeah, I was going to say, can I add to that? And one of the things, and this goes back to the stat that that we were talking about earlier with the number of people who are solopreneurs versus have multiple hirees. And one of the things I think culturally that we need to have conversation about that we don't talk about enough is the lack of trust in our community when it comes to business, because part of identifying people to scale is knowing that you're going to give those people that you're hiring, you're going to give them some autonomy to make decisions. And one thing that I saw even in my personal experience with my mom is that was one of her problems. She comes from a time and a place where trust, especially with us, right, and when it comes to our money and our business, right, and our customers, right, who are relationships, we have a problem trusting other people to enabling other people to control and manage that. And so we have to get good at not at identifying people, but when we're talking about hiring people, we have to have that conversation about trusting people and finding people that we trust to be responsible for that part of my business or our business. That's a very, very
great,
hard
important,
thing.
Important point. Important point. I'm up against the break, brother.
Let me jump to this break.
Yeah, well, I'm going to let you do it out of the break, if you will. Let me get to this break, and I'll definitely let you address that. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
On Saturday, 4 p.m., November the 11th, Lulu Events presents a play asking the ultimate questions. Why should I get married? Join us for a tale of love and marriage and a different kind of date night with good food, good drinks, and a celebration of longtime married couples leading by example. Tickets are only $25. Please visit eventbrite.com and search in Georgia for Why Should I Get Married? Limited seating, so order your tickets now and catch this night full of love, power, and agreement. Saturday, 4 p.m., November the 11th, Why Should I Get Married?
As an entrepreneur, the year-on-year uncertainty, you have no idea
what's going to happen,
when the cliff's going to fall. You have to walk with certainty when it's constant uncertainty.
As an entrepreneur, you don't have fear. There is concern, but no fear.
Most entrepreneurs don't understand that line. Mm. When the getting's good, everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. They have no idea. I remember when I went to an event last night, I wanted to leave immediately because it reminded me of I would fly to a room 5 hours, not know anybody in the room, and hopefully meet one person. Leaving my family, flying 5 hours, staying in whatever accommodations I could find, would lead me to one meeting, one person that would lead me to a follow-up.
Yep.
And that's how I started my career. That's the ugly truth. People ask me, what's the secret? I don't sleep much, and I don't see my family much. That's the secret. You like that? Because you can do that too. And it's just brutal.
I've seen you in those rooms.
And then you speak to these young entrepreneurs, and they try to fast forward and shortcut the process.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, boss up, can everyone become entrepreneurs? As we hear Steve Stout on the shop giving his perspective on entrepreneurship. Terry, go ahead and jump in where you want to jump in. Sorry about cutting you off, brother.
Yeah, well, and look, Steve is one of my favorite entrepreneurs. I love his company, Translation. I follow him really, really closely. But going into, talking about kind of bypassing that process, I think it's partially because the entrepreneurs that get sensationalized the most and that have developed some of the most powerful platforms and companies that we all utilize and consume on a daily basis, they did it in their 20s. So I get it. What we have to do is we got to contextualize that and say, well, you know what? Most of these people are in two or three spaces. They were either in tech, right? So they developed something proprietary. So then that proprietary development, they were able to leverage that to go and raise capital, or they were able to go to market and grow a sizable company in a short amount of time. And then what happened? Most of those founders transitioned into a different role, and they hired a CEO. They hired a VP of marketing. They hired a VP of operations. They're not doing that anymore. Why?
Yes.
Well, because that's what was best for the business. And they didn't just maintain those roles because they had the autonomy to do it. And so I think, because I don't want to discourage any young entrepreneurs out there, I want to inspire them to take a different route. Because what we don't talk about enough, Montoya, is
that whole jump off the porch model that we like to glorify. We don't talk about the depression that comes with that in a lot of cases. We don't talk about the financial trauma that comes with that. And that financial trauma, we glorify it because we like to talk about, you know, Steve Harvey sleeping in his car or, you know, whoever you want to select that has that hero story. Tyler Perry's got a sleeping in his car story. And those are amazing stories. But most people never come out of that and recover. Most people are so traumatized by those experiences that it's debilitating, and they never get back in the game. And then they live a life of regret because they went into something that they did not have the preparation and capacity to do, and it was so traumatic or so debilitating to them financially, or it ruined their marriage, or it ruined their relationship with the people who invested, and so they never get back in the game in a lot of cases. And so I want to make sure we have a balanced conversation and talk about both. Yes, those are beautiful stories, you know, about Tyler Perry investing his, you know, his tax refund in a play and nobody showing up and him being homeless and XYZ. And now look what that has evolved into. What he has done is absolutely amazing. However, there is a different way to go about it. From a personal standpoint, I started my first business when I was 19. Okay, so I had all of those intangibles that we talk about. I had none of the tangible skills. How could I at 19 years old? I grew up in a small coastal community in South Louisiana where I didn't even know one other entrepreneur in life. So how was I going to have those skills? So I acquired those skills through lots of traumatic experiences, just to be honest. And so I'm not speaking from the perspective of, you know, the grumpy old entrepreneur that's saying these young cats need to pay their dues. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I don't want them to pay for the experiences that we on this call have already paid for. And what I'm saying is if you think that you have a culinary skill set or you think that you have a technical skill set, whatever that case that is, go ahead and substantiate that with some credential, number one. Number two, go exercise that skill and foster that and nurture that on someone else's dime for whatever time frame that you can do it. And while you're doing that, try to acquire a financial profile. Try to acquire some assets that you can then leverage that can catapult you into business as opposed to the jump off the porch model. That is a recipe for trauma, and we glorify that way too much. That's not something that we should or have to go through.
Can I add to that?
No, I love it. If you will, just touch on this real quick as well, because William was talking about being able to trust you know, the people that you hire, per se. And I know you have a small workforce, and you recently had a cut online talking about the development. As you know, as you were recommending that, as you say, go get it on someone else's dime, where now you're, in a sense, the CEO, if you will, having to develop your workforce. So that issue of having to trust is why you have the business that you have, whereas William is giving the example of someone who's not able to do that. It limits their expansion. They may be able to have their own business, but it limits being able to really expand and maybe, in a sense, create the structure to pass it down. Go ahead.
What I wanted to say to William's point before we went to break, I'm glad you brought that back. I'm going to tell you. What I want to say to his point is that another thing that we're conditioned to believe is that the magic happens in the complexity. The magic don't happen in the complexity. The magic happens in the simplicity. So those of us that are saying it's hard for me to hire people, it's hard for me to trust people because they can't do it like me, it means you simply haven't simplified what you do enough to where somebody that is reasonably competent that you can pay $20 an hour or $25 an hour can do it. That's on you. That doesn't make you uniquely gifted or uniquely qualified. That just means that you hadn't sat down and documented it, streamlined it, and figured out how to simplify it in a way where someone else can do it. And look, every business is not meant to be scaled. Every aspect of a business is not meant to be scaled. I'll give you an example of my own business. The workforce development side of our business is not where the most growth potential exists, even though that's where we get the largest contracts, because that requires my time and my talent. That's something that I've been doing for the past 25 years. It's difficult to find people with that specialized skill set. Now, the media side of our business is absolutely scalable because I can find videographers and editors and graphic designers and web developers all day long that I can pay above market value, and we can bring in as many of those projects as we want. And so understanding that from a business standpoint or even from a business line standpoint is important.
Yeah, yeah. Can I add to that also?
Yeah, so, please do. Jump in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I lost my train of thought. Let me see. I was talking about, yeah, the trust. So going back to the trust, growth, right, which is very important, and it's kind of what Terry was talking about. When people get burned or they have a bad experience, a lot of times they get out, right? And that's a tribute. You can attribute that to a lot of things, whether you're talking about, you know, finance, investing, business. People have a bad experience the first time, and they kind of go away from it. And one thing that I've learned that's really been good with me is, and I've had to learn, having a late start is exactly that. When you don't or you're not able to leverage the things that you own, right, then you're forced to trust outside of your comfort zone. I'll give you an example. Like when I talked about my newest business, I went into it with partners that I had to trust in the way that they do business to work with them because I didn't have the capital that I needed to start that on my own. And that forced me to go outside of my comfort zone, and my partners aren't my culture, right? They're just not my culture. They're a different culture, right? And so they do business totally different. And so I was forced to go outside of that. And what I see, and let me tell you guys what I see, like even the way that they run business, right? And this is true across a lot of different cultures. As you get closer to managing the money, what happens is the people who are the owners or have the most equity or the highest percentage of ownership, when it comes back to that trust, bringing it back to that trust, the closer you get to the money, it's their people. So the closer you get to managing the money and managing the customer, they want it to be their people. And I say that because it's about that trust and scalability. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that hurts us as a collective because I'm like, you guys can't just hire your people because you don't trust other people. I get it. Everybody does it. All cultures do it. We don't do it. But we don't do it as much as I've seen other cultures do. But the closer you get to that money, the more it's their people because it's managing that customer, which is a value proposition. It's that money, which is a value proposition. So that lack of trust handicaps when you're trying to hire or when you're trying to expand. And sometimes that trust will burn you, right? Because I've been burned too, and that's part of the game. Like you misjudge people. It's like hiring people. Sometimes you hire the wrong people. That's going to happen. You can't avoid that. That's going to happen. Sometimes you're going to make the wrong decision in business, in being an entrepreneur. That's part of the development. What you do is you learn from it, you reflect on it, you grow from it, you change the process, and you try to make it better. And that's when you call Mr. Simmons, right? Because he's going to tell you exactly how to go about doing it. You know what I mean?
Let's dig into that just a little bit. We got a couple minutes before this next break. Let's dig into it, and I'm curious to hear Terry's thoughts on it. At the end of the day, we are Mentor Dialogue, so we do race, sex, and culture. Then I'm always love the opportunity to talk about African American business. That's why I quite often call you guys, because y'all are the experts, if you will. Not our niche per se, but Mentor Dialogue, the psychology of us, is what we focus on. And so I love what you're talking about. As you said, getting closer to the money is a trust of, in a sense, their own. And so it has us, we have to speak about, in my opinion, just based on you pointing that out, is culturally, we do have to, in a sense, learn to trust one another. And I'm not saying you just give your trust away, but the culture of trust, some of that's being lost in the dynamic of what I would offer is lack of family structure. A lot of trust is built within family structures. And so when you go look at those other cultures, quite often not only is it in a sense their own, but it's also typically others with family structures so that they can, in a sense, they know this person has the same value system as me.
Yes.
You can only know that based on being respectful of each other's family structure, not skin color, because they don't trust everybody in their race. They don't trust everybody in their ethnic group.
But typically a lot of trust amongst family, because what it takes to culturally build family requires a lot of trust to have a successful family. So that's why you see typically a lot of successful families generating these major businesses. I might have talked us to the break. Hold on, let me see.
That is so on point.
Yeah, I'm up against the break. So, Terry, I would love for you to respond to that coming out of this last break, y'all. Got to take care of my sponsors. That's how we stay on the air, and to the individuals that are supporting us as well. We'll be right back. All I ask is that you think.
Are you tired of the same old networking events where all you do is shake a few hands, give out a few business cards, and nothing happens? Well, Mensa Dialogue and Bookstore Gallery invites you to First Mondays to dialogue and connect for cannabis and conversations, a unique and fun networking experience. Get there early to compete in the Connect Four Icebreaker Tournament. In addition to networking opportunities, the event will include cannabis industry news, mystery poet, and dialogue on race, sex, and culture. All attending business owners can give a one-minute pitch about their business or upcoming events. This is a donation to enter event and must be 21 to attend. Monday, November the 6th, 7 p.m., Cannabis and Conversations, where networking is a vibe. For more details, visit mentaldialogue.com.
And so I think that it's just a shift in mentality, first and foremost. We tend to think about entrepreneurship from a solopreneurship standpoint, which is what can I do? What can I monetize? If I'm making 20 bucks an hour doing this in corporate America, then certainly I can, you know, demand $100 an hour if I'm doing it for myself, in essence. And it just becomes a glorified job at that point, because that $100 an hour gets broken down. You know, when you was at your job, you didn't have to worry about, you know, business development, marketing. You didn't have to worry about the equipment, the inventory, any of that, the insurance, and so forth. So you're still making, matter of fact, you probably still should be making $20 an hour with your company if you provide the same service, if that's what the market value is for your skill set. But some of us don't understand it, but Montoya, to be honest, I think more of us understand it and aren't willing to deploy the sacrifices that's necessary to move that way. I can tell you, and I'll hush and let other folks weigh in, but I've been taking this approach to my businesses since probably 2004 is when it was a real shift for me. And so there were times when, you know, my companies were generating, you know, seven figures in revenue, but I was driving a really modest vehicle. Most of my employees were driving nicer vehicles than I was. But I would put my money either into the business, or I would put it into community-based initiatives that I was passionate about.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, boss up, can everyone become entrepreneurs? Special guest Terry Simmons, as well as William Magnu, as we hear another cut from none other than Terry Simmons, continuing to break down that perspective. But right before the break, if you will, Terry, I was just kind of asking you to jump in, if you will, into the psychology of, you know, I would say, distrust that we always inherently says is within our community. I don't necessarily subscribe that it's inherently within our community. We, in a sense, there's a lot of things done for, in a sense, it to be there. I would challenge us to really understand overcoming it will actually help us be more successful in business, if you will, in a sense, to be like what, quote unquote, the other cultures. And we kind of overplay how they're successful. It's something that we could easily do if we focused on it, in my opinion. But your thoughts on that aspect of trusting and going into business with one another and being able to scale because you can trust one another, which, again, seems to be an issue sometimes.
Well, I'll talk about why I think that exists, and then I'll talk about what needs to happen to address it. So I think it exists primarily for two reasons, and not necessarily historically. I'm speaking real time. Number one, we have so many self-proclaimed gurus in different spaces, a lot of which are financial, entrepreneurship, relationship, whatever. We all know, we can all list some names, self-proclaimed gurus that really what they're gurus at is storytelling and inspiring people, mobilizing people, whether that be digitally or on ground. But what they do is they have a surface level knowledge on whatever it is. It could be on day trading. It could be on business credit. It can be on you know, building a company, starting a box truck company, whatever it is, and they're able to leverage the credibility that comes from their celebrity, and people get mistreated, and so then we then say, see, this is the reason why we can't trust our people. The second reason why it happens is because when we do partner with one another, a lot of times we think, well, since we share the same values and we have a complementary skill set, then we just going to bust this business down 50-50 and it's going to work itself out. And I can't tell you how many companies that I've worked with that don't have a partnership agreement, they don't have an operating agreement, and so it's kind of like a prenup. I'm not going to say that having a prenup is preparing for the marriage to fail, but if you can't have difficult conversations when you still love one another, then you're probably not going to be able to have those difficult conversations when the relationship breaks down. So it's the 100%. Same way in business. If you can't have difficult conversations about, well, what's going to be your operational role versus mine? Take home more of a salary. Should I have more decision-making power? Well, I put up, you know, $100,000. You only put up $25,000. I think that I should have a 70% stake in the company. You can't have those conversations when the two of you are excited about the potential and willing to be flexible. You're definitely not going to be able to have that conversation when the company's generating a couple mil and you're disputing over how that should be divided. So I think that's the reason why it exists. Now, as to what we should do relative to what William was talking about, because I don't want to glaze over that. That's a whole show in itself. But when I talk about infrastructure, when I talk about infrastructure, I'm not talking about anybody else's definition of infrastructure. When I talk about infrastructure, it includes those relationships. Many of which may come from outside of our community. Your tax planner may not be black. Your attorney may or may not be black. Your commercial real estate agent may or may not be black. Your IT firm may not be owned by a black person. I'm not trying to say that it should not be or that you shouldn't give those minority-owned firms a solid look. But what I'm saying is when we talk about building infrastructure, I'm talking about that as well. And, again, that's something that you can't really fast-track because now – so I can assure you that whatever infrastructure that Dwayne, in terms of relationships, whatever infrastructure that he has for his I'll call it development business, some of that got extended to the rap business, not hip-hop. We're talking about the vehicle rap business. So the point is it takes time to build that. Now, when I was earlier, I would say early 30s is when, you know, I started seeing, like, exponential growth in my business, and I had the resources to invest in those personalities. I wasn't investing in those personalities for what I needed at the time. Because I could have went and got a $80 hour CPA at that time, but I didn't. I went and got the $320 hour CPA because I knew growth was on the other side of that. I knew growth was on the other side of having that the attorney that deals with, you know, acquisitions and deals with, you know, mergers and things like that. And I'm not saying that my company's there yet, but those relationships that I'm not going to say that I paid for the relationships, but because we did business, now they're a part of my company's infrastructure. I can extend that to my businesses. I can extend that to my clients. You know, someone says, hey, I'm looking at buying a home health business for $5.5 million. And, you know, I want someone to take a look at it. I'm like, okay, this is the person that you need to call. So now that's added value that I can extend. But the point is that we don't have that as a community because a lot of those personalities and those skill sets are not areas where we have traditionally gone into. And so when we decide to collaborate with somebody outside of our community, especially if they put up most of the money, they're bringing that to the table. They're like, okay, well, if I'm going to put up 70% of the capital, this is the CPA firm that we're going to use. Right. This is the financial review or auditing firm that we're going to use. And if you don't have the leverage to say otherwise because, you know, your equity doesn't provide that for you, then, you know, it could go either way.
I think Dane Bass.
No, it makes sense.
The guy that puts up capital is the boss.
It makes sense. For the listeners out there, if you want to get in on this discussion, you do have to press 1. If you want to join us, if you're just listening via the phone, no problem. We only got a few more minutes here, if you will. But just in delving into what we're talking about. Actually, let me jump this caller in and get them in real quick before we go. Area code 678, last 3060. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion.
Hey, good morning, fellas. This is Darsko calling in from Atlanta.
Good morning, sir. What you got for us, King? Thank you for getting in with us.
Yes, sir. I wanted to call in and sort of circle back to the topic in regards to when a person should start a business, or should they continue working a 9-to-5 for, you know, like a corporate America situation?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we got a few. We only got five minutes, so if you can make it quick, that'll be helpful. I got to get my guest closing thoughts. You got in at the last segment, but if you can make it real quick, jump it in there real quick. Thank you.
Yes. Basically, I wanted to say the way we can tell when it's a good time to launch, it may not be a good time to launch. Number one, if you're not a good worker and you don't know how that business is ran where you already are from top to start, if you're not a good follower, you're not going to be a good leader. If you want to be a good entrepreneur, start with where you are. Learn everything about the business, accounting, finance, legal, quality. When you can run your current business like your own, then you're ready for your own. The second thing is, a lot of times people leave their business or the employment because they don't want to work for someone else. But when you're an entrepreneur, you work for way more people, and all the pressure is on you. And so that's not the reason to start a business, because you're tired of working for people. And thirdly, I am a business consultant, and I always recommend people, before you start a business, keep your job, because your salary that you get every 2 weeks, you're going to need that to support your business, and all of the money that you make from the business should go 100% back into the business. You should not be using the funds from the business to pay your car note, groceries, and mortgage. And then lastly, before you start a business, talk with a business consultant to learn the good and the bad things. When you start a business, it may take 7 to 10 years before that business takes off. And last thing, 90% of businesses that start go out of business, and those people have to go right back to working in corporate America.
Thank you for that. Yep. Beautiful 3 cents, King. Thank you for jumping in on this thing. All right, Terry, if you will, brother, we only got a few minutes here. So if you want to give a quick closing thought and let people, if you want to put it out there, how they can stay and follow you and stay in contact with you, I want to do that. I want to give William the same opportunity as well. But thank y'all for an amazing show, as I expected. But go ahead, King. Appreciate you for coming on with us this morning.
No, absolutely, brother. Always appreciative of the invitation and the platform. I always tell you, man, what you're doing is revolutionary in a number of ways. But I think we hit all the points, and I think we hit them multiple times. You know, we as a community, we got to redefine what entrepreneurship is, number one. Number two, we got to be willing to put in time and the sweat equity to acquire the skills, to acquire the relationships, to acquire the capital, the infrastructure, and so forth, to really build companies that are bigger than just us, serve our communities in ways other than just personal income. And I think it just starts with a mindset and seeking out the right information and not attempting to duplicate things that, quite honestly, are an anomaly. You know, yes, let's celebrate the 24-year-old that has an eight-figure business. Let's celebrate the person that was homeless and built an eight-figure business. Let's celebrate the person that walked off their job with no plan because they felt undervalued and they built a seven-figure business. But that's an anomaly. There's a different way to go about it. Now, in terms of my organization, again, company name is Orange Strategy. They can either go to terrysimmons.com if they want to, you know, tap into my personal brand website for any of those services, or they can go to orangeisastrategy.com. Name of the company is Orange Strategy. The domain is orangeisastrategy.com. Phone 225-960-4022. We're Baton Rouge based. We do business across the southeast, southwest region of the country, but we'll go anywhere.
Thank you, brother. Let me jump William in here. We only got a minute to go. But just like the brother that just called, get you a business consultant if you want to figure this out. This is one of the best in the game. William, I don't know if you want to give out any public information, but if you will, give it out before we get off the show. But thank you both for an amazing show once again.
No doubt. I just want to say entrepreneurship, definition of entrepreneurship, organization of business, right? That's the first half.
second half is taking on more financial risk. You can do that without owning a business. As a matter of fact, that starts with understanding your money. Your money is your first employee, right? If you understand how to manage your money and treat your money nice, then you understand the concept. If you start that early with your children, teach them how to do that, that's into entrepreneurship. So that's all I want to say.
Love it. It's all right, we going, y'all. Next Saturday, you'll see us, as always. We're always here in Atlanta. Conversations Monday night, 7 p.m., bookstore gallery. All I ask is that you think.
Airline credit card rewards have helped grow America's travel and tourism industry. In 2022, 15 million Americans traveled domestically using reward miles, generating $23.4 billion for local economies, supporting more than 183,000 jobs. But now Congress is considering legislation that could eliminate credit card rewards and decimate the U.S. travel and tourism industry. Tell Congress to support travel and tourism jobs and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card routing legislation. Visit handsoffmyrewards.com/travel to take action. Paid for by the Electronic Payments Coalition.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.